Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hi there. Here we are again.
The Rage, Out for Blood 2.
Back in the habit.
Back in the studio.
Oh, you know what? I do sort of miss those early days recording all the interviews in your flat with all the traffic and the drunk people outside.
And inside. And yes. Inside. Well, those were the days. We've actually moved.
Since you have then. Moved. How's that working out?
It's delightful, yeah. I don't think that's why we're here, though, is it?
No, I want to hear more about your house.
Okay, sure.
No, that's not, you're right. That's not why we're here. No. We are back for one night only.
One night only.
Thank you. One night only for a special bonus catch-up episode.
Can you believe that it's been over 2 years since we released our first episodes of Out for Blood?
It's madness. It is chaos. I can't believe it.
It is true. I've checked. And what a roller coaster it's been.
When we first started planning this, we thought that we'd maybe get like 5 listeners.
Yeah, me, you again, my mum, Tom. Maybe.
I wasn't planning to listen to it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom. It turned out that something weird happened. The show just kind of took off. So many people from all around the world downloaded our little podcast and seemed to sort of kickstart a new conversation about Carrie.
They're still downloading it now. So thank you to everyone who has supported the show and for continuing to spread the word. We love you all. But why are we back today?
Well, if you've downloaded this today on Monday the 13th of February, know that today it's exactly 35 years since the first ever preview of Carrie the Musical up in sunny Stratford-upon-Avon.
By the Westfield.
No, as previously discussed, that's the other Stratford.
Although that's not quite true, right?
You are right. February the 13th, 1988 was the scheduled first performance of Carrie. But that show was actually cancelled because, according to articles in the local press, the show wasn't quite ready, would you believe?
You do surprise me. That's right. According to this article, which I have personally saved from the Birmingham Evening Mail, it's a letter from a very angry man called Mr. P. Bisson from Redditch. There was a total, quote, lack of consideration shown by the RSC, who cancelled the performance with very little notice.
This is the kind of detail we like on Out for Blood. Can we get Mr. P. Bisson on the show?
If anyone can track Mr. P. Bisson, or is indeed himself, please get in touch.
Email us, Mr. Bisson. So we may be a day or two off, but we felt it was important to mark the occasion. And anyway, the show did get its official opening press night on Thursday, the 18th of February. So we're not that far off.
And we all know the repercussions of that chaotic night. See episode 3 for further details. But surely it can't be 35 years. I was yet to be born for at least another 20.
Sure. I mean, it's true. Carrie the Musical is now as old as someone with a mortgage and children.
Speaking of children, we have a new member of the gang.
I did wonder who that was in the corner.
Yes. No. Milk enthusiast, Broadway fan, and my progeny, Aneirin, John David, Morgan Moores.
Hi, baby.
Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. It's one hell of a name, isn't it? Get ready for people saying your name wrong, which is thematically relevant to the podcast. What else is celebrating a birthday today?
It's only our editor, Tom.
I was going to say Jerry Springer and Stockard Channing, according to Birthdaypedia, but sure.
Birthdaypedia? Yeah. Happy birthday, Tom.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in on your birthday to edit this nonsense, because we're obviously going out live.
Yes. Any other things that are 35 this month?
Well, I've actually sadly lost my login to Birthdaypedia, but a quick Google, and it's less popular sister site Wikipedia, tells me the Winter Olympics opened in Calgary, Canada, 35 years ago today as well.
Sports facts.
Yeah, we love sports here on the pod.
Just diversifying that audience.
Yeah, #sports. Tom, anything else?
Bruce Springsteen's Tunnel of Love tour started in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Yep. Okay, sure. There you go. Thanks, Tom.
Sorry. It feels weird to be shading you for having a niche interest when we're doing this podcast.
It's like people are interested in other stuff.
I know, imagine.
Anyway.
But basically what we're saying is that Carrie the Musical was the key event of 1988. That's our takeaway, isn't it?
I think that's what we've been saying all along. Probably the entire 80s, to be honest.
Absolutely. My birth. Your birth.
Not important.
No. But isn't it amazing, though, that a show that has been declared a flop by many is still being talked about all these years later?
That's sort of what we found fascinating all along, isn't it? What was it about this show in particular that caught the imagination of people to keep it in the...
Zeitgeist.
The zeitgeist.
I've always wanted to say that word.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope we played a little part in introducing this unique musical and the story of its creation to a new generation of theatre fans.
And of course, we were so lucky to meet some Carrie heroes along the way. What have they been up to?
Yeah, a lot has been going on. Firstly, isn't it nice to see theatres back up and running almost pretty much as normal again?
Yeah, because when we were recording our original episodes, we were in and out of lockdowns and theatres all over the place kept having to close.
It was a bit bittersweet. We were all sort of missing theatre, but of course it did mean that all of those amazing people involved in the show over the years were at home and sort of really excited just to get a chance to talk about Carrie and theatre and the community that they loved.
Yeah, very strange time. Well, the Carrie alumni have been popping up all over the place.
They have, that's right. Lovely Lindsay Hateley returned to a role that she hadn't played for 30 years.
Oh. Carrie White. Is it happening?
Not quite. I mean, that would be incredible. She returned as the narrator in Joseph, which she first played way back in 1991, just 3 years after Carrie closed.
And also, her daughter, lovely Meg Hateley, is now in Mamma Mia.
Yes.
A show which her mum has been in.
Amazing. Let's start a petition to get them both in it at the same time.
With a Cher cameo.
It could happen. I saw Sally Ann Triplett, original Sue, in a rather excellent production of Cabaret in Paris. Because I'm so posh.
You're so posh. And she was in Billy Elliot, which I heard loads of great things about. Yeah. Now, I believe you may have been up to a couple of things these last 2 years as well, because we've obviously not seen each other in that interim period.
We only ever communicate in this small recording studio.
That's what I've requested, yeah.
While you were busy having a human baby and other such exciting grown-up things, I just basically kept continuing to talk to people about Carrie the Musical, to people on the street and whoever would listen, really.
Yeah, you had a baby of your own.
I suppose you could call it that.
Very similar process.
Well, our lovely social media followers kind of know this already, but very excitingly, I've written an actual book about Carrie the Musical.
An actual full book. This is the dream.
It is a bit.
How did it happen?
Well, you'll remember during the podcast, I mean, not to give away our behind the scenes secrets, but we sort of didn't record everything before we released it, right? So as the episodes were being released, loads of people connected to the show just kept appearing and kept putting us in touch with more and more people.
We basically unlocked the Carrie floodgates.
Yeah, and because we'd sort of told the story of the show chronologically, it was hard for us to add people into the podcast at the wrong moment.
We tried.
We did try. We had some recaps and many bonus episodes. And anyway, there were all these extra people and new stories to tell. And the end of lockdown meant that, you know, archives and libraries were all back open. So I was really lucky. I got to look at old technical drawings and listen to recorded interviews and all sorts of geeky Carrie stuff.
Yeah, I remember you being very excited about a trip to Stratford, not the Westfield one.
I did. I spent far too long sort of poring over old newspapers surrounded by lots of very academic looking people researching very important Shakespearean stuff. there I was reading about Carrie. And anyway, combined with, you know, literally hundreds of hours of interviews that we three had recorded back in the day, it sort of felt like there was a bigger story to tell about the creation of the show. And not to be fancy, about the cultural context of why it became so well known despite its short life.
Absolutely. Any juicy secrets?
Well, I can't possibly say. You'll have to read it.
Oh, yes. What a tease. So what you're saying is, you found out where the unitards are stored.
Don't tell them, but there is a whole chapter just about the unitards location. I've cracked it. No, it's about more than unitards.
Is that the for
that's
the cover?
The strapline. This book is about more than unitards.
And when do I get my complimentary copy?
Well, you can pre-order it from wherever you get your books from. Sounds quite profesh, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
I mean, local bookstores are obviously excellent. They should be able to get hold of it for you. But it comes out in the summer. You can get it from the publisher, Bloomsbury's website, and pretty much anywhere you get your books from. Mm. Shall I put a link in the show notes?
So are you saying I'm not going to get a free copy?
Well, I only get a few, and I have to give one to my mum. I promised a few other people. Niall probably want one.
Yeah.
So I know, of course, you can have one half price.
Will you sign it?
What do you want me to write?
Something inspirational.
Don't waste the moon.
Perfect. Okay. But in all seriousness, can we come back and talk about it when it's out?
I would love to come back and talk about it when it's out. Anyway, I've got a ton of people that I need to thank for their help on the book. So why don't we do a little book club special in the summer?
Yes, let's do it. Carrie, book club. I will bring the wine.
Again. I'm so glad you can actually drink wine again, because that was a dull 9 months.
It was really dull, wasn't it? Oh, my God. I'd also just like to say how immensely proud of you I am for writing this book.
Thank you. Well, I mean, it's all because of you guys. I would not have been able to do it without the help of you two and all of your many hours spent chatting about Carrie the Musical.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I'll have to swab the studio. But that's not all of your Carrie projects.
It's been quite the year of Carrie for me. Morning, noon and now. Finally got to direct my own production of the show.
The year of Carrie.
It has been the year of Carrie. There were points where Carrie was in my head every waking hour of the day. It was a bit much, I'm not going to lie.
Did you think you had magical powers?
I did start to try and move things with the power of my mind only. And sometimes I thought it was working.
Oh my God. Look, I saw your production of Carrie. It was my
shortly after giving birth, which I can only thank you for.
It was a hallucinogenic experience. No, I absolutely loved it. I thought that it was so wonderful, and it wasn't just because I was out of the house. I promise, and I'd had
just
a wine.
Some fresh air.
No, it was absolutely tremendous. And I did miss the cardboard cars.
Oh,
And obviously you didn't cast me as Carrie, so had to terminate our friendship briefly.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah. It was obviously a difficult choice, but I think your childcare arrangements would have been too tricky. That's the only reason I didn't cast you as Carrie in the show.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yeah. But if you'd let me know, we could have workshop something. You know, we could have disguised Nye as a pig.
You're saying Nye would have had to be in the show as well as you,
yes,
playing 17-year-old girl, having just given birth.
Who would play my mum?
I mean, that would have definitely added a new dimension to the story. It's definitely an interesting interpretation.
Is that a baby?
A baby dressed as a pig. Someone would have done a podcast about it.
Exactly.
No, I mean, it was an amazing opportunity. You know, we've talked about both versions of Carrie so much on this show. And this, of course, the version you can license is the 2012 revival production. It was so much fun to dive into it. And alongside writing the book, it really did give me a different perspective on the show. And I'll tell you something. Carrie the Musical is a hard show.
Difficult, huh? Yeah.
It is a hard show.
What were the main things you learned about it?
I mean, there were so many moments where you kind of find yourself having to come up with solutions to a lot of those crazy situations that we've talked about, right? And we sort of, you know, we joked about them a bit, but, you know, how do you do all of those special effects? How do you do that blood drop several times a week on your very expensive microphones and costumes? Mm. You know, it's a challenge. And how do you rehearse a show which has those two very distinct worlds?
Mm.
So even though it's very different to the show that, you know, Terry Hands and Debbie Allen and the writers worked on back in the 80s, which we all love so much, you know, I could well understand all of those challenges. Mm-hmm. And I started to understand the decisions that were made to change certain things in the revival. And of course, you know, we had different problems to tackle. We were a non-professional production in the sense that we all had day jobs to go to. And, you know, even then COVID was still floating about. We definitely didn't have a Broadway budget. So, you know, how do you put together this very challenging show with all of those different things layered on top of it? But, you know, hundreds of people are now doing this show every year. And this is what we've found interesting all along, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, this show that was deemed a flop is now being performed all over the world, and people are loving doing it. And so I feel finally very special to be part of that big club of people who've worked on Carrie. I think, you know, generally appreciated a lot more the intricacy of the music and how the show is structured and how the characters interact. And definitely that all gave me a new perspective, a new refreshed love of Carrie the Musical, I think.
Mm-hmm. Are we allowed to talk about your idea with how you did the telekinesis?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell the listeners about that, because I thought that was really, really interesting.
This came from a really interesting idea that Paul, our movement director, had. And, you know, we'd been talking about how to do the telekinesis in quite a small theatre space where, you know, strings would have been visible if we suddenly started floating things around Carrie. And we wanted to kind of come up with a sort of interesting creative solution for it. So we had a fantastic member of the cast called Polly, who is a really talented contemporary dancer. And she came to audition, and we were only just talking about this idea at the time that we'd kind of create a new character, and we slightly pompously gave the new character a name, The Power.
Oh, I love it.
The Power. And the idea was that Polly, who was playing The Power, would sort of be a sort of dark, shadowy version of Carrie. And whenever the telekinesis was sort of brewing in Carrie's mind, Polly would appear and she would kind of move things around for Carrie. And she would kind of reach out and slam the windows and throw the props around. And it was really creepy. And it kind of gave the audience a bit of a shock every time she appeared. And I think, you know, it was a really interesting solution. And directors all around the world have come up with different ways of doing it. And there's no wrong or right answer. But it was a really interesting kind of new dimension to explore, I guess.
So interesting and so visually affecting as well. Because, I mean, the styling, you sort of styled her a bit like the girl from The Ring.
Yeah, like it was a bit like The Ring, yeah.
Which was really great. So it felt like, oh, we're tapping into another aspect of the horror yeah. element of this story. It yeah. was the heritage of the piece.
And we sort of reflected, you know, the costume that Sadie, who was playing Carrie, her costumes were sort of mirrored in Polly's costumes in a sort of monochrome way, as if she looked like she'd been dragged through a forest or something, but she was sort of streaky and bloody and black and white. And it was quite cool. And I think it reintroduced a sense of that kind of horror, as you say, into the story, which is now quite a kind of psychological show rather than a flat out bloody horror story. But it was fun to play with, definitely.
Definitely. And I think it kind of, sorry, I'm just really going to go off on one.
Go for it.
But like, if I was a real wanker, I might say that perhaps she represented the ego or the id or something.
Ooh.
Like, you know, the fact that I don't know which one of those is which tells you how much of a wanker I am. That I will.
Let's pretend that that's what we were.
That's pretend what we were doing.
Yeah, that's
pretend
what
I know what I'm talking about.
Not just doing a spooky Carrie.
spooky bitch.
No, it was very fun. We had that. We had lots of other fun stuff to do on a budget.
Yeah.
But it was great fun. And we had the most amazing company. And they threw themselves into it. They were all so much fun to work with.
It was superb. And we are very excited to have a couple of the lovely stars of Chris's Carrie here in the studio today.
Ah, here they are. Yay! Hello. This is so exciting.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Well, mate, I think you should introduce yourselves first of all so we know who we're speaking to.
Yes. Hello, I'm Sadie. I play Carrie in Chris's production of Carrie. And I am Ellie, and I played Sue in that production.
It's so nice to see you guys.
It's so nice to see you.
In person. How are you? How are you doing?
Yeah, really well. Good. New year.
Yeah, new year, new you. You finally
we try.
Have you finally scrubbed the fake blood off your skin yet?
It took about 2 months for my feet, but yes. It has happened.
It's still on my shoe. I'm wearing the shoe.
Are you? Are you wearing Sue's shoes?
I am wearing Sue's shoes.
Wow, that's a nice souvenir to have.
Souvenir?
A souvenir. Oh, see what you did there.
Incredible punning. I love it.
Well, thank you for joining us. We're going to grill you on what it's like to be in Carrie the Musical.
Yeah. So, Sadie, you had some pretty big shoes to fill. Not blood-soaked ones like Ellie. But you had some pretty big shoes to fill playing the role of Carrie.
No kidding.
Yeah. What was it? Was it like to play the role? I wouldn't know because Chris wouldn't let me do it.
It was rude of him, I thought.
Yeah, I did too.
It's such a huge part. Both kind of literally lots to learn, lots to do, but also it's an enormous thing. I've never been so vocally challenged in anything I've ever done. And also it's very, very emotional and very, there's so much going on kind of in her internal life. And it's also, it's funny, I'd listened to the podcast before we started rehearsing.
Nice plug.
Just a little plug. And so I'd listened to Lindsay talking about what it was like for her. And obviously, very much not the same scale. But I did really relate to that feeling of it kind of feels like everyone else is doing Mean Girls and you're over in the corner doing a kind of Shakespearean drama and like a kind of tragedy. And so it's really funny because there's that vibe in rehearsal where like everyone's having this like fun, upbeat, like silly time and you're just like quietly having a mental breakdown. So yeah, it was really demanding, but it was such a fantastic experience. I'm so grateful to Chris for letting me do it. And it was really really, really great.
I mean, you totally threw yourself into it. I can't imagine how you managed not only to do the show in the end, but to just rehearse it. Like you say, it's just such an intense role to do. It just kind of takes over your entire life for a few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And like someone who like was bullied a little bit at school as well, like some of it was like revisiting stuff that I haven't thought about in a really long time and kind of getting back into that headspace and being like, oh yeah, that was really hard and really painful.
Yeah. And I mean, you were working with the fabulous Nina, who I wish we could have here today, but Nina played Margaret, and the pair of you were just this kind of dynamic force of nature throwing each other around the stage. So it was quite a physical role as well.
Absolutely.
Not just a kind of mental thing to get around, but like very physical.
And Nina was great, and we kind of very quickly realized we were completely on the same page and how we kind of understood what we were doing kind of together as a duo in the piece, and had a really kind of open lines of communication about what was okay, what wasn't okay, like where were kind of things coming from for each of us. It was really I've never played a part that demanded that from me, and it was she was the perfect partner to do it with. It was great.
Yeah, definitely. And Ellie, what about Sue? Sue plays this kind of big role in this version of the show now.
She does, yeah. And I absolutely love Sue. It's interesting because when everyone wants to audition for Carrie, people either be like, I want to be Carrie or I want to be Chris. No one ever goes for Sue. And I couldn't understand that because I only ever wanted to be Sue. I've known the show for like 5 years, and ever since I listened to it, I only ever wanted to be Sue. Yeah. And I adore her. I think she has this such a beautiful arc, and there's so much sincerity in her as a character. So getting to play her was a dream. So thank you so much as well.
No, I mean, again, you were just fantastic. And I think Sue kind of creates this thread through the story because she tells the story now, and she's always there on stage and kind of almost like an audience member, you know. She kind of watches and comments on what's going on. So again, it's, you know, you can't really escape from it. You're sort of in every bit of it.
Yes. And I got a little shout out from Christy Altomar, who played Sue in the 2012 version. And in the shout out, she was just like, Sue's such a hard role because you go back and forth. You're happy, then you're sad. It's tragic and then it's great. Yeah. And I was like, do you know what? That's so true. And I think Sue gets a rap of being like the wet one, but she's not. She is, there's so much emotion in her, and that's why I loved it. But it was really challenging as well, but great role. Yeah. Love her.
Oh, amazing. So Ellie, you knew the show.
I did. Yeah.
Did you know the revival? How much did you know about its sort of history beyond?
Honestly, actually, just the revival.
Oh,
I didn't know much about the history beyond at all. I think someone literally posted on Facebook, oh, I got into Carrie in some other production. And I was like, what's Carrie? Like, I know the book, but what's the musical? So I listened to the revival, and that's the one that I've known and loved. But then when I listened to your podcast, I learned so much about the history. So through you, I've been educated. Thank you.
We were saying earlier, you know, people do this show now and they don't have as much knowledge of that original production, which, you know, is, you know, it means that whole kind of flop thing that's loaded onto Carrie isn't part of it anymore.
I never knew it was
people.
A flop. Yeah. Never. I never knew that. So to hear it, I was like, how is this a flop? It's fantastic. And then when I heard you guys talk about it, I was like, oh.
I now see. Once you see, you can't.
Once
see.
You see.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but I realised as I got into this that this show is very hard to do. This is no walk in the park. You know, or this is a highly technical show as well as all the kind of psychological and physical stuff. So Sadie, what advice would you give to anyone who's going into the show to play Carrie? And do you think you could have, another thing that we've sort of talked about is how hard it is to do that role in particular for a long time, because, you know, there haven't really been many productions of Carrie that have lasted for, you know, years and years, like a long running Broadway type show. Do you think you could have sustained doing that every day?
I have no idea. I'm inclined to say no, probably. It was so, by the end of the week, it's just so draining, and kind of in not dissimilar to Sue, and like they mirror each other in a lot of quite interesting ways. But I think, she has that just constantly being set up for the catastrophe. Mm. And the way, especially once we started doing runs and once we started doing it in the space, I would find myself kind of forgetting what was going to happen because I'd be trying to like keep it really in the moment and really like responding to what was happening as it was happening. And then you get to prom and I'd come to this front and look at Adam, who played Tommy, who was wonderful, look at Adam and just suddenly go, they're about to cover me in blood. Like, I remember now.
Spoiler.
And it is really, it's quite excruciating at times and,
yeah.
but really thrilling as well. And I think there aren't that many parts where you kind of explore the depths that we go to and the heights that she gets to as well, because in a way she also has her perfect night before it all goes wrong.
And it was
very demanding, physical as well, as we talked about, like constantly being thrown to the floor, being kind of shunned out of like every kind of possible opportunity and relationship and all that kind of stuff. It's just, yeah, it was intense, man. It was intense.
Well, you kind of mentioned it there, but maybe you can talk a bit about what it was, that blood moment was like, and what that kind of, you know, because this was not, you know, a professional production in the sense of, you know, we didn't have unlimited resources. We couldn't be on the stage for very long before the show started. So we couldn't really rehearse that very much, could we? It was all kind of done on a bit of a wing and a prayer. What was it like kind of going into that whole part of the show?
Well, it was really interesting. I'm going to talk a little bit about beforehand and then lead into it, because it was an interesting kind of development. You decided very early on that it was going to be real liquid of some variety, not kind of confetti or lights or whatever. And that was great. And that sat very well with me. I was like, yeah, that feels really real. I can't remember how long it was before we started doing it in rehearsal. But about halfway through the rehearsal process, I went to the stage manager's house and she covered me in blood in her garden,
yes,
basically.
I remember.
And we kind of spent an hour like cooking it up on the stove. And it was just, stage blood, synthetic blood. But we were like, what if we cooked corn flour into it? Would that make it gungier? And then a flatmate stood on the roof and literally poured blood off the roof onto me in her garden, and the whole garden was covered in blood.
It's a destructive show. It just damages property.
And that was like, okay, so it's one thing having like hours to mentally prepare for it and like doing it in someone's garden, and then having to do it every night, how many shows do we do?
I think six in the end.
Six shows. It was a lot. And once we got into the space, it was really interesting because there were, you know, specific ways I had to run off, and people were opening curtains for me so I didn't touch anyone and I didn't touch anything. And it was cold as well. That was obviously because limited time and resources, there was no way of kind of making it comfortable body temperature. Yeah. So it was just like...
harrowing.
You know, 2 litres of blood in a water bottle that had been put in a bucket and poured on my head.
Oh my gosh.
I remember watching you do it the first time in the theatre in one of the rehearsals running up to the show. And I think after it happened, I just felt this weight lift off my shoulders, because I think all of us had been thinking, is this going to work? Is this going... Because, you know, if that had ruined your cost, you know, we had a few alternate costumes, but if it ruined the costume, if it ruined your mic equipment, you know, there were so many things that could have gone horribly wrong. And I think I remember watching it and it looking really good and just being like, oh, thank goodness it works.
There was a great thing actually on the night that Lindsay Hateley came to see it, sorry, spoilers, she came up to me afterwards and she was like, you did it with real blood, how are you doing that? And I very truthfully said to her that our lovely sound engineer covered my microphone in condoms.
That's
how we did it.
Yeah. Top secret trick.
And we got lucky that the dress was very washable.
That was
like magic dress.
Magic dress.
How did that come out? Like seven times or whatever.
Yeah. I think it's testament, you know, we had such a lovely crew and production team who just worked on all sorts of solutions to all sorts of things to make that work. We might have covered that, but what were your favourite moments from the show or the process as a whole, Ellie?
Oh my gosh, that is a good question. I had the best time overall, just the absolute best time. I think in any show, my favourite moments are a lot of the ensemble stuff, but Sue doesn't actually do a lot of the ensemble stuff with everyone else, and I missed that. But it meant that, like, in as an opening number, which is epic, was just so much fun, and I loved that every single night. And in a way, I wish it wasn't the opening number, because it was just over so quickly. But another thing that I loved so much was working with Tommy, Adam. He was just such a lovely partner, and we get on so well.
Aww.
And even now, like, we're such good friends, and it would just make the experience so nice. I think those two things are probably
the standouts, but the whole experience from start to finish was a dream come true.
We love Adam.
We
love
do. Adam.
Adam. Appreciation Society.
Our first Northern Tommy Ross.
Oh gosh,
from Wigan.
Yeah.
He's from Wigan.
Is it?
And Sadie, what about you? What are your kind of standout moments, I suppose?
I mean, I love kind of like Ellie, the bits where everyone comes together, and I think a real highlight for me was the Sitz Probe, was the band call.
Yeah.
Because we'd spent by that point a couple of weeks doing the real nitty gritty stuff, kind of really getting into the detail of it. And then it's so wonderful, that feeling of, you know, you finally have like a full band in the room, everyone's mic'd up, and you can just hear everyone absolutely slaying it. And it was amazing. And like the opening, those opening notes of In, which I was always really jealous because I didn't get to do any of that.
Yeah.
And I thought In was the coolest number. And then the beginning of Eve was Weak as well. And it's just iconic. Yeah. And like Nina just always nailed it, and it was
Watching you and Nina sing opposite each other, like I'd be mouth open, like this is just insanely good. Mm. And the Sitz Probe really highlighted that.
Yeah, it was really lovely.
Yeah, it was honestly, as an audience member as well, the power of the vocal power collectively was really affecting. And like the bride was like an old swimming pool, but the acoustic really it was gorgeous. Well done, lovely. So Sadie mentioned that you did have a couple of special visitors.
We might have.
Who came to see it?
The lovely original Carrie. Ooh. Lindsay Hately came to see it, as well as a few other original cast members.
Kenny and Michelle.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It was so lovely. So lovely to have them there. And they were so generous in their feedback. Mm-hmm, they kind of stood around with us all afterwards, with me still covered in blood. And kind of did a bit of a debrief with us and talked a bit about their experience. It was just... yeah, it was a bit of a dream come true. It was really exciting.
And it was so nice to see like they'd stayed friends for so long. And I think that will be the same for our production, that I can see myself staying friends with the gang for quite a long time. I don't know what it is about the show. Bonds made for life.
Well, we've said this a few times on the podcast, you know, whatever experiences different casts of Carrie have, whether they're bad or good, often they come out the other end of the process with this very kind of close friendship. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to hear you say that. I was going to ask you just before we let you go, what you think you take away from this experience.
This sounds really naff, but I feel like doing Carrie is the most like present I've been on stage. And I'm usually someone that is really in my head and like analysing as I go along. But with Carrie, I just completely let go, is completely in the moment. And I had the best time, and it's, on stage I enjoyed every moment, and that is something that I'm going to carry to other shows, to just stay as present as possible. Don't over analyze things. Sometimes what you do is going to be rubbish, and that's all right, but in the end it will all come out well. And I think that is something that I'm going to take away with me.
I think not too different, actually. Mm-hmm. Like I think there's so much in playing. There's the classic my mother thing. When she came to see it, she said, "Well, it's amazing to see you play against type." And normally I play the kind of the flirty one or the bitchy one, and it was a real like challenge for me to play the underdog and also the kind of really emotionally kind of complicated one.
Mm.
And I think that was a real challenge for me that I could like take a lot away from, and also kind of the literal kind of the vocal challenge as well. It gave me a lot of confidence, and I could like feel my voice develop as we rehearsed, and that was really exciting. And just the kind of social element as well. I've never felt so plugged into a cast and so kind of part of it all. And that's hard to do when you're playing Carrie, especially because they have so many rehearsals without you. And there's so much that is really kind of different and divided among the cast. And you're just having totally different experiences, as I said before. But it was really wonderful. It was a really wonderful time.
Yeah, it was.
Well, thank you both so much, not only for coming today, but for all of the work you threw into that show. It was, I know how, you know, it was a challenge, but it was so much fun to do it with you guys. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
So
so amazing that Lindsay and Kenny and Shelley came along.
It was so nice to see them. And I was sitting a few rows behind them and I was like, oh God, what do they think about it? Do they hate it? Yeah. Are they going to leave at the interval? But they were so nice. They stuck around and had a lovely chat with us all. And yeah, the nicest people.
They
in
are
the
lovely,
world.
Aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely lovely. Well, thank you to Sadie and Ellie for coming
in.
Thank you. It's so nice to see them. And thank you, of course, to the rest of the company, right? Mm-hmm. They were so amazing to work with. It was, as I say, an amazing experience and a real kind of bucket list thing for me to do.
Yeah. Now, talking of cast members from the original production, you mentioned earlier that you got to meet even more people from the Carrieverse while you were writing the book. Who were some of your favourites?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, it was great to speak to, I mean, I spent a lot more time speaking to Dean mm-hmm. and, of course, the other two writers of the show, Michael Gore and Lawrence D. Cohen, who we weren't able to chat to the first time on the podcast because of their schedule, but I got to speak to them for the book, which was fantastic. So it was great to hear their side of the story and speak to a lot more people involved in the music side of things, which I found really interesting. You know, the original MDs and the original orchestrators, lots of people involved in the design of the original production, mm-hmm. but I always love talking to the cast members and, you know, we've spoken to some fantastic people for the podcast as we've gone along. They just all have these incredibly unique experiences and memories. So it was, yeah, it was great to speak to more people who were actually in the show. I loved it.
Yeah, got to catch them all.
Yeah. Pokemon.
How many original cast members are in the book?
You know what? I was adding them until the very last minute and I was counting up this morning. From the original cast, I think I've included interviews with 18 original cast members.
That's very impressive.
It's quite a lot. And one person that I really loved speaking to, who we hadn't managed to track down actually for the original podcast episodes, but I managed to speak to her for the book, was a lady called Rosemary Jackson. Mm. And the really interesting thing about Rosemary is that as well as being in the very dance-heavy ensemble...
Ellen, high kicks galore.
Yeah, high kicks, lots of thrusting. Mm. As well as doing all of that intensely, she was also Lindsay Hateley's understudy for the role of Carrie.
A famously intense vocal and, you know, acting role.
Exactly. So it's kind of like two massively hardcore roles. And although obviously the short run of the show meant that she never got to go on as Carrie, she did have a really interesting rehearsal process learning her dance role with Debbie Allen and her acting role with Terry Hands.
Really interesting. And we're so lucky because Rose agreed to chat to us about her time in the show.
We asked Rose, who was just a teenager at the time, how she ended up bagging an audition for Carrie.
It's such a brilliant Broadway story involving bumping into Carrie choreographer Debbie Allen in a lift.
I was a college student and somehow convinced my mom to let me come to New York to audition and take classes and things of that nature. I got on an elevator going to a class and Debbie Allen got on the elevator right after me. And I was absolutely speechless. We go up to the sixth floor. She got off on maybe the fourth floor and elevator door closed after she got off. And I thought, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't say anything. So I went back down to the floor she got off on, followed her, kind of weaved around until I found out where she was, slid my resume and picture, a horrible picture and a resume full of lies, under the door. And I don't know who opened the door and said, is this yours? And I said, yes, would you please give that to Miss Allen? And he did. And I stood there for a minute. They closed the door. I stood there for a minute and nothing happened. So as I was beginning to walk away, the young man opened the door and said, we're in a meeting right now, but she wants you to come to, and it was the address of the audition that was happening in like 4 days for Carrie. I didn't even know what it was for. I didn't even care what it was for, but I was going to show up to that audition. So I went to the audition and everything went well. Then I didn't hear anything for like 2 years. It went completely quiet, but I was thrilled. I had at least gotten the opportunity to dance in front of Debbie Allen.
Now, as we know from our many hours of discussion, the original producers of Carrie dropped out around this point, and there was a real struggle to raise enough funds to get the show up and running.
It wasn't exactly classic Broadway fare.
Meanwhile, everyone who auditioned in New York was left without any closure. Rose went and got a job on a cruise ship as a dancer, and during this time, Terry Hands signed up to direct Carrie. A new producer was found, and things got back on track.
2 years later, I'm on a cruise ship dancing, and my mother calls me from Louisiana and says, Debbie Allen just called. And I went, no way. And she said, yeah, they want you to get off the boat and meet them in England. And I went, no way. I got off the boat in Barbados and flew to Britain, and there you go. What's more incredible, in my opinion, is they could have hired any dancer from New York. I mean, certainly there were a billion amazing dancers in the city. The fact that she remembered me was crazy, and that she had to literally hunt me down, and they paid for me to get to Britain. They had already been in rehearsals like 2 weeks, so I would have probably replaced me 10 times in 2 weeks, but they stuck with it until I could get my things together and get off the boat and get to you know, London.
So suddenly Rose found herself in the slightly less glamorous location of a West London rehearsal room with the cast split down the middle between Americans and Brits.
Putney is very similar to a Caribbean cruise just in terms of the vibe.
Absolutely. Yeah. Probably a bit of a culture shock, especially because we know how intense those dance rehearsals were.
I was already late, so I was in a panic. I had to play catch up the entire time. Rehearsals were everything you'd expect a Debbie Allen rehearsal to be. They were grueling. They were long. They were meticulous. They were fun as hell, though. I mean, I don't think I've ever had that much fun on a job in my life. Everybody was just so young and excited and enthusiastic about the possibility of this thing that we were creating. The divide disappeared almost immediately because we had so much in common. We were all young and enthusiastic. We were all hungry. We were all just these amazing dancers who really wanted to do this thing really, really well.
Now, as well as having to master Debbie Allen's intense choreography, Rose had another interesting challenge.
All of the understudies were a part of the ensemble. One day, Terry Hands just called me in and said, I'd like you to sing this song. And I start singing. I did the song and he said, okay, you're going to be Carrie's understudy. And I was like, cool. Of course, Lindsay's never going to get sick, but this is awesome. And so the time was divided a lot when I was doing my ensemble work for the most part. And then I would go after the ensemble was released and catch up on the Carrie part. So, or sometimes Lindsay had an interview or Lindsay had a fitting or whatever it was, I would jump in and do blocking so that we could kind of keep the ball moving forward and then run back and teach it to Lindsay. So it was a lot of juggling.
What did she think about Terry Hands' infamous classical vision for the show?
What a nice man. He was just a gentle, kind man. Very clear on his vision, even though it went over many people's heads, including mine most of the time. But he was very clear about what he wanted. And we were going to work toward that thing. Whatever his vision was, that's what we were going to work toward. I totally trusted him. I know I did. We didn't understand a whole lot of things, but we were young, and if we were gonna wear these Greek-looking costumes, I guess that's what we were doing. You know, I think as a cast, the younger people just trusted the powers that be. We trusted Dean and the music and the score, and we just trusted them, as bizarre as it was.
What does Rose remember most about the experience?
It was all just a party. It was a rehearsal and then a party every single day. I could do the show tomorrow. That's how embedded in my brain it is. It really, really is. It had quite an impact. And I think because I got to do both sides, I got to be the ensemble and have the fun and to do all the high school shenanigans and be Carrie, I think that's why it kind of just sticks in my brain so, because both were completely different experiences. All the musical numbers stick out, every single one of them. I just thought the music was so good and fun. And I go back now and I think about the lyrics and I'm like, oh my gosh, we were promoting the worst things on the planet. The opening number, literally, I mean, by today's standards, you can't go up to a young person and say you need to be thinner or the boys won't like you.
Rose formed a very special relationship with Darlene Love, who was playing gym teacher Miss Gardner.
When I arrived at the show, I was late, 2 weeks late, completely behind and every way. And I was a train wreck. They would go right, I would go left. And I would hear this laughter in the back, in the corner, but it wasn't a laugh at you kind of laugh. It was a, oh, how cute is this child, just kind of laughter. And that was the first day I was there. And I had to stay after to try to catch up. And she stayed. I didn't know why, but she stayed and just sort of was encouraging and really, really just sweet. And then when I was done, she walked me to the apartment and she became my mom almost immediately. Like, she's my mom.
They're still incredibly close, and Rose still works with Darlene whenever she needs any choreography or movement for her concerts.
I don't even think about it as work because she's my daughter knows her as grandma. So yeah, but we have worked together. I think she saw just completely how young and inexperienced, and I think she just literally said, let me take this poor child before something happens to her. I remember her saying to me when we walked to the apartment the very first day, child, where's your coat?
So sweet. So what has she taken away from working on Carrie all these years later? How did Carrie change her life?
It gave me a career. I knew it was what I always wanted to do. It probably would have taken me a lot longer to get here and get started. I don't know a bunch of people who just kind of plop into a Broadway show with such an amazing experience, because it wasn't just Broadway. It took me overseas, and the whole picture of it just was beyond. I think that being Carrie's understudy and being a part of the ensemble gave me perspective on a lot of levels. It set the standard for me. And I'm gonna say just this one little thing, because it sounds crazy, but as many things as can be said about Carrie, the standard was always really, really high. From the musicians to the director, everybody had this really high expectation of how you were gonna show up in the room. And if you're gonna be a part of a flop, go big.
Amazing stories, right?
Incredible.
Well, thank you so much to Rose for sharing those brilliant memories. You know what? I think it's about time that we wrapped up. I think someone needs to use this studio for another podcast.
What's theirs about?
I think I heard them saying it's a 10-parter about the thought process behind casting Cheryl Cole in 222, A Ghost Story.
Niche, but those in glass houses. So, right. And Irene, we would go bowling if you really cared.
I think he's saying he doesn't understand the reference.
Well, he should listen to the bloody podcast then,
shouldn't
he? Pipe
it into his brain. There's still time. Well, that's about it for now from us, other than to say one last happy birthday, Carrie the Musical. Mm. Oh, and Tom.
Yes, happy birthday. Yay. Thank you for changing lives. Not you, Tom, and then Carrie the Musical. Is that too much?
I don't think so. We heard from so many people involved in the different versions of the show about how it changed both their professional and personal lives.
And remember that gorgeous bonus episode with all the fans talking about how the show had impacted them? I think we should raise a toast to Carrie.
There's never been a musical like her. Cheers!
Cheers! See you in around 35 years. So February 2058.
I thought we were going to do this again in the summer.
Oh, yeah. And we'll probably be dead in 35 years.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Maybe. Let's say the summer for now, then, not 2058. Let's go for a few months.
Round down. Buy the book.
Oh, God, yeah, thanks.
Yeah. See you in the summer.
Bye. If you enjoyed Out for Blood, please leave us a lovely review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps us reach more and more people in the future. You can also go back and find some great pictures and videos from our previous episodes on our socials at Out for Blood Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and Out for Blood Pod on Twitter.
Out for Blood was hosted and produced by me, Holly Morgan.
And me, Chris Adams.
Sound engineering and editing by Tom Moores. Paddy Jervis is our audio consultant. Original music by Odin Orn Hilmarsson. Artwork by Rebecca Pitts. And childcare by Richard Hawkins.
Against his will. Thanks again to our guests today, Sadie Kempner and Ellie McWilliams. And of course, the lovely Rosemary Jackson. Out for Blood is a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network.
What sort of podcast do they specialise in?
Broadway, baby.
Right, I'm off to Stratford to catch a matinee of Othello. Luckily, it's only 23 minutes away on the tube.
Bye! Why is your baby not called Tommy Ross?
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suf's has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.